Rewind is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wiseye.org/donate or text WISEYE to 44321.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Governor Tony Evers signs a bipartisan state budget worth billions. And state lawmakers moved fast to preempt big changes coming out of Washington. Plus, the Wisconsin Supreme Court rules that abortion is legal in the state of Wisconsin. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 3rd.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. It's a big week, J.R. I think we're both running on some fumes over here. So let's talk about why we have a budget.
Yes.
As of about 1:30 this morning, the governor signed it into law, but it was a bit of a wait, hurry up kind of situation. So walk us through, how did we get to the point that at 1:30 in the morning, the governor is signing, not flanked by children, not, you know, having a big celebratory signing moment, but like 40 minutes after it passed, why the turnaround?
Pressure creates action in the Capitol. Deadlines help things, and the deadline became the reconciliation bill. We'll talk about later in the show about what's in there, but there was a rush to beat that bill. So what kind of happened was we hit this brick wall 2 weeks ago. Devin Lemon, who said the spending is too much, all of a sudden they realized we have to beat that bill if we want to enact some of these things in this budget. And so all of a sudden we got this notice, finance meet on Friday of last week. They said they meet at 10 o'clock in the morning. They came in at 10 o'clock. And so at night, worked for an hour and a half, came back on Tuesday, was it, I think, at this point. Worked some more, knocked out some more things. We got this budget deal, the heart of which was Governor Evers cut taxes deeper than he wanted to, and Republicans spent more on education and childcare they wanted to. It was a compromise, but it was a, this is the compromise of this part of the budget. So it wasn't everything. They knocked out this big piece that can help break through. They knocked out joint finance on Tuesday, and then we go on Wednesday. Now what was interesting was the race to finish this off. So to popular home, bills becoming law is not really sexy, but the normal process is the governor signs the bill, the reference bureau publishes the bill the next day, a day later, and then the following day becomes law. Well, to beat the reconciliation bill, which is now passed Congress and the president wants to sign it on Friday, they had a kind of this little clause in there saying, once the governor signs it, reference bureau is gonna publish it moments later, it'll become a law immediately. So that's why there was Rick Champaign, who's the head of the reference bureau, standing on a stack of budgets, essentially his hands last night at 1:30 in the morning at the governor's office, we could sign it. And pop, 2 minutes later, it's up on the website. So we have a budget. Now, there are lots of things in this budget. There are tax cuts, there's spending, there's good stuff for UW system. But it also kind of created an interesting breakdown of who liked it, who didn't, in the final votes.
Yeah, I mean, so what were we kind of expecting going into it? We knew that we needed to get some number of Democratic votes to get this ahead, but what was the breakdown? What do we know about that?
So I think in my conversations, it was pretty clear that Chris Capping of Delafield, Steve Noss of Whitewater, Rob Hutton probably of Brookfield were going to be known in the Senate. Capping had basically laid out, I don't like any of this. I want no budget. Keep things as is. Noss laid out like an impossible like list of demands for Evers to sign the budget. I mean, you could have done a budget like that, maybe get through this caucus, but the governor never signed it. And then Hutton, on Friday after we taped the last show, came out and said, hey, we got this delay. Let's pull back and take a couple weeks and maybe longer, go through the budget line by line, find more spending cuts. So we knew those three. Mary Felskowski, the Senate president, that was kind of this, you know, I'd heard she was unhappy about the budget. That was the big one that voted no for the Republicans. So now you do math. Start with 18 Republicans in the Senate, minus four. You got to have at least three to get 17. And so people were counting on Dianne Hesselbein, the minority leader, she was going to vote for it because she negotiated part of the deal. That was what's interesting. You had Evers talking to Devin Lemahieu and Robin Voss since March, essentially, but they brought in Diane to try and figure out, okay, we need votes from you. How do we get this done? So Diane was there. That was interesting. Brad Paff on Alaska, people kind of thought he would come along. Jeff Smith, Eau Claire area, he's up for election next year. Mm-hmm. Never a bad thing to vote for a bipartisan budget for election. And then two freshmen, Jamie Wall in Green Bay, who when Joint Finance finished his work in the budget, said, hey, here's a great project in my district up in Green Bay. I like this part of it. So, okay, that was kind of a sign. And then Kristen Alfine from Appleton, kind of a surprise to people because her district's pretty Democratic. So you're going to the math going, okay, who's got the swingiest district? Who does benefit most politically to say, okay, I'm voting for a bipartisan budget? And so she wasn't on the list, but in the end, it sounds like she wants to work across the aisle, which is admirable to a lot of people, and they got to 19 votes in the Senate. Yeah. Assembly, a little bit different story.
Yeah, and that was sort of interesting, too. In the Assembly, Republicans kind of had the votes on their own, and yet we still saw seven Democrats cast votes for this budget, although a lot of kind of speechifying about why they were doing it. And the reaction from the lawmakers, even those who supported it, was kind of mixed. I think across the board, what I was seeing was a lot of Republicans generally kind of holding up those who did vote for it, saying this is a great bipartisan compromise, this is the work we came here to do, not what we would have passed if we had, you know, all three branches, but a good compromise. Democrats seemed much more kind of holding their nose and voting for it. So saying, we got some of the things that we wanted, you know, thanking Evers for getting some of their priorities in there, but saying, even the ones who did vote for it, it doesn't go far enough. So that was some of the reaction. And then you mentioned the Felskowski vote, and this was really interesting because she's the first Senate president to ever cast a no vote against a budget. So what do you know about this?
So I went up to her staff and said, hey, just kind of curious, you know, if you know if it's ever happened before. They said, no, they'd actually asked Reference Bureau, kind of our great researchers we have with the legislature to figure out what's going on, and they found out no president ever done that. Now, okay, so think about this. If you are the president, you're in leadership of the majority party, like your party creates the budget, like writes the thing in your chamber. You're supposed to be part of the team to pass this, and she didn't. That's a big deal. And, you know, brings a lot of questions. For example, is she looking to run for governor someday? We asked her about that afterward, and she kind of laughed it off and said, no, I'm not even thinking about that. But still, you know, she took a lot of shots at Governor Evers, and that's maybe an issue to bring up. Two, you know, there's all kinds of talk always in the Senate, like who's going to be the next leader? Like what's the dynamic of that caucus? So is she angling for some bigger role in leadership? Like what, does she want to run for Congress someday? So Tom Tiffany is up in her district. He's congressman looking to run for governor. She runs for governors, I give her a platform run for, you know, there's all kinds of like, in politics, we're always asking, what do they want to do next? You know, that's kind of an interesting thing. It's like, if you do something, you must want to do something else. But with Felskowski, she just has a problem with the idea of giving hospitals more money and not addressing the healthcare costs. Remember though, she works in insurance. So there's this yin and yang in healthcare, right, of providers and insurance. So she has an insurance perspective, people will say, or argue, and that shades her view of what's going on in hospitals.
And I think we have a little bit of video of sort of some of that push and pull that you're describing between Felskowski and then also how Speaker Robin Voss responded to it.
Yeah.
10% of Wisconsinites will not go to the doctor and delay care, and it becomes more acute, sometimes fatal. They're not afraid of the diagnosis. They're afraid of the cost. We've heard this time and time again. And what does our governor do about it? Makes a bargain with special interest for a $1.1 billion windfall. The hospitals do not have to do any reforms. In fact, negotiating with the hospitals, they walk away from the table because it was told, you don't like it, we're not doing it. That's Democratic control.
We worked so hard to be able to put a budget together that we could all be proud of. I mean, when you look at it, it had a lower level of spending than the one that she voted for a couple years ago. It had fewer positions, so we cut a lot of unnecessary regulations. So there's a lot to be proud of. Look, if the federal government has a program that allows money to come back to Wisconsin to help reduce the cost of health insurance, and it has no negative impact, doesn't expand welfare, doesn't do anything that wouldn't be where a conservative could advocate for that, that's something we should all be proud of.
And you know, the thing that we kind of keep coming back to is just what a long day it was, and for different reasons, right? I think a lot of lawmakers just kind of needed to get like their opinions out on the floor, kind of get on the record. But what did you make of such a long day?
So there's process stuff. So remember, we talked before that usually it takes days to draft a budget after finance finishes it. I kind of forgot to mention though that as they go through the process, so when the finance committee finishes a section of the budget, the drafters draft that section. So let's speed it up. But two, technology's gotten better. So when I was a much younger man, it took 5-7 days to draft a budget. Now you can do it as you're going along and finish the last section. So there was getting stuff done. Then you have to check the language. Every budget I cover, it seems like, has a technical amendment that's added at the very end. That's code word for leadership of, we got to fix some stuff. And it could be, you know, like fixing language or trying to guard some partial vetoes. But this technical amendment was 35 pages long. It was written and introduced about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday. Reading through it, I found the word technical twice, two sections, once about technical colleges, once about actual technical changes. The technical college piece was, there's now this deal requirement that if you're a faculty at UW System, you have to teach a certain number of hours, or you have to buy down your reduced load. They were going to apply to tech colleges. They removed that section. That was interesting. Also, the technical amendment added $51.8 million in additional spending to what was already in the budget. That's not very technical. It also adds a study for Universities of Wisconsin to look at how it can be more efficient. Like, look, there's declining enrollment in a lot of campuses in UW system. They want to know, well, how can we address some of these things? Like, well, how we right-size the system? So that's in there. Again, not really technical, but they added it in. They had to get that drafted, go over the language, brief Senate Republicans and Assembly Republicans, Senate Democrats, Assembly Democrats. That's how we get to going until 1 o'clock in the morning, because also usually the houses go back to back on different days. One will go first, they want the same day. Again, this rush to beat the reconciliation bill. And then I doubt I will ever see again the Assembly wrap up the bill, a budget bill, and the governor waiting to sign at 1:32 in the morning in his office. That doesn't happen. I've been here for a long time, but 13 budgets, 2 budget repair bills, nothing like that's ever happened before that I can remember seeing.
Yeah, and that UW piece that you mentioned, I think, is also such an important part of the compromise, right? We went from the governor asking for hundreds of millions of dollars to UW to Speaker Voss saying, no, actually, maybe we want to cut it by $87 million. Part of what the deal on Tuesday was $256 million in spending. And then some of those kind of like last minute adoptions added a little bit of, consideration to what that money, what was attached to that money, let's say. But we do have a little bit of video from that debate, from that long, long day that we just witnessed. And so let's go ahead and play that.
This has been a bipartisan effort. I've said many times, any budget is a compromise between within caucuses, within the houses, and in this case, with the executive branch as well. So I think we ended up in a good spot here. We're funding the priorities of the state. Happy with the budget in front of us, and encourage you all to support it.
This is a survive budget, not a thrive budget. This is a budget that, if we are lucky, will allow our child care providers, our public schools, our universities to survive for 2 more years, in the hopes that those of us in the inner ring here find ourselves in the outer ring 2 years from now to actually be in a position to give them what they truly need to thrive. Democratic votes for this today are not an endorsement. They are an acknowledgement that this budget is better than no budget, and certainly better than the one that Republicans proposed.
My vote today isn't about what we tried to do. It's about what this budget is failing to do. And make no mistake, this budget fails to deliver for the people who need it the most. Our schools are bleeding, our teachers are burning out, and our children, especially in Milwaukee, are still waiting on a promise that's been deferred for far too long. You cannot claim to love education and leave it underfunded. You can't be pro-kid and anti-classroom. We cannot keep leaving school funding up to referendums. That's not democracy, that's desperation.
When I hear that somehow this budget is penalizing Milwaukee or Milwaukee is suffering as a result of this budget, I could throw up. This is a compromise budget, there's no doubt. And No one here is completely happy with it. But for Pete's sake, this is a good budget. And don't let anyone say that this it doesn't deliver for the city of Milwaukee.
All right, so it's a little bit of a test now for you, JR. What are some of the big numbers coming out of this budget?
All right, so it's $111.1 billion in all funds. That's state money and federal funds. Add in the borrowing, the bonding spending, about $114 billion. Now, just looking at the all funds spending, not clean borrowing, about 12% increase. That's notable because that's a lot for Republicans to swallow. Devin Lemahieu, the majority leader in the Senate, said, hey, look at the general purpose revenue. So remember, like, we have kind of different checkbooks in state government. So federal money is over here. We have this general fund, the main checking account. That's where we pay for, you know, things like that's where tax cuts come out of, or spending on schools and Medicaid. That one's about 7% for the increase. And so that's in line with inflation. Also, don't forget, we had this $4.3 billion surplus to start. They're trying to spend it down through the tax cuts and other things. So he said, hey, we're okay there. Plus, the federal component of our spending is driven a little bit by this hospital assessment we're going to talk about later on, and that pumped things up. So there's that piece of it. Also interesting to note that the governor, when he started this all funds budget, $122 billion, a 20% increase. So they dialed it back. Now, that technical amendment that was added, I think from my numbers so far, we still have a surplus projected in this biennium, about $775 million. That's noteworthy because they didn't spend all the surplus. They're leaving themselves a cushion because of what's happening with reconciliation was important. Like, there's cuts to food stamps that we could have to pay a bigger share of those costs. You're giving yourself more money in case, hey, we also have a bill for X million dollars from the feds to pay for this program. That helps you out. If there are other things go south in the next 2 years, it gives you a cushion beyond that rainy day fund, which we've had in Wisconsin. It's grown significantly. It's now about $2 billion. That money, though, it's hard to see it being tapped. If you're a Republican, so the dynamic we have right now, Republicans in charge of the legislature, I don't know if they'll ever tap that money, because they're going to say, if we have to do it, we'll cut before we take this money, this rainy day fund. Now, if it's unified control, maybe a different story. But anyway, we got a little bit of a cushion. Haven't spent everything, still spent quite a bit compared to what we were doing 2 years ago.
And another kind of number that jumped out to me and got talked about on the floor a little bit was this idea of a little over 300 fewer state jobs. Republicans talked about kind of trying to cut some of the bloat of government, cutting bureaucrats. I looked into some of those positions, and many of them came from kind of just doing away with vacancies, especially at the VA, but also a couple state jobs created in Department of Corrections and all of these new prosecutors. And so we're seeing, you know, increases in some state jobs, decreases in others. So just some fun numbers to look at there. All right, and let's get into the big numbers around the deal. So this deal that was struck on Tuesday, it feels like 100 years ago already, the day before yesterday. And so this was, you know, Tuesday morning, it kind of came out that, like, okay, this thing is really moving. Republicans and Democrats and the governor have kind of gotten on board with a couple of things. So Republicans got, as you mentioned, more tax cuts, more than Democrats had wanted to give them, about $1.5 billion. It was, we thought, 1.4 a couple of days ago. Eliminate sales tax on household utilities, exempt some retirement income tax. So those are some big wins for Republicans. And then Democrats got some of their priorities, increase special education reimbursement rate, $256 million for UW, as we mentioned, $330 million for the child care industry. And so both sides, you know, again, throughout the day and throughout some of those speeches, were really trying to hang their hats on these bipartisan victories and say, you know, like, our side got what we needed. What are some of the things that also jumped out to you from the final package?
It's like with child care, there's this interesting thing, if you're a dork about numbers like I am, there's been a dispute between Governor Evers and Republican lawmakers about interest off of federal COVID-19 dollars. So we got all this money from these various packages in 20 and 21. And when you put it into an account, you actually draw interest on that. It's about $172 million last time I checked. At one point, lawmakers talking about, well, should we sue the governor to try and make him turn this money over? Because there's a big question of, if you get federal funds, the governor has authority to spend it as he or she sees fits. But if it's state money, you have to have lawmakers have a say. Well, is that state money or is it federal money? They avoided this entire kind of like conflict by saying, okay, we're going to take some of that cash and pay for the child care stuff. So Governor Evers wanted to have state money and a continuing appropriation to pay for child care accounts, which is his baby to pay the subsidies to child care providers. They didn't do child care accounts. It walks and talks like child care accounts, but it's not a continuing appropriation, and it's funded by this interest money off of the COVID funds. So that's kind of interesting when they did that. UW, look, when they asked for $855 million, people told me if they don't get a cut, that'd be a win, right? They're getting, now it's $256 in the deal they talked about. The net increase, the way Fiscal Bureau does it, kind of the grading of things, about $240 million. So, but it's still a lot of money compared to like what we're expecting for them, win for them.
And not to mention also some of the, something like $800+ million for capital projects, yes, across UW campuses,
that,
which is
that
also.
That was just in the deal, actually more than that in the capital budget. So yeah, they do okay with that for sure. The taxes, so we already got the Republican ones for exemption on retirement income, expand that second tax bracket, cover more income. Interesting, state law right now exempts your utility bill from the sales tax in the winter months. They basically made it year-round. That's how you get the $178 million, I think it is, for your utility bill. So I guess when you're running air conditioning this month, you'll pay less off that. But basically, everybody gave something. And the governor, he's not happy about child care accounts. He wants that program. But he got enough to say, okay, my red line was, I got to have child care subsidies or some program, or I'm not on this budget. He got something to make him happy enough to say, I'm doing this. Republicans didn't want to give him any money for child care accounts or anything that looked like it, but they got tax cuts. And Robin Voss has said from the start, I've watched us send tax cuts to Governor Evers year after year, and he vetoes them. This is the only way to get a tax cut done with him going into an election year.
That's right. And also, you know, Evers said without the proper amount of funding for childcare, he would veto. And so they both kind of, I think, drew their lines in the sand a little bit. But there were a couple tiny little partial vetoes in there. Nothing quite as gimmicky or exciting as 2 years ago with the 400-year
yes.
veto. But there were 23 partial vetoes in total. The governor removed the GOP deadline of 2029 for closing the Green Bay Correctional Institute. Notably, he wanted to close it by 2029, but according to a very different plan. So he said that this is a way to kind of bring Republicans to the table, maybe try to strike another bipartisan compromise over closing the prison. He did away with a couple earmarks, and I would love to hear your perspective on that. I was also really struck by some of the projects, the DNR projects that he vetoed as a way of, again, trying to bring Republicans to the table on Knowles Nelson. But tell me a little bit about these highway earmarks that were also partially vetoed.
Most of the projects that were earmarks were in Republican districts. So the Fiscal Bureau does this report off every budget of what the earmark is and what district it's in. It just so happened most of the earmarks he vetoed were in Republican. It's sort of coincidence.
I'm sure.
Sort of coincidence.
Yes.
But with Green Bay, what's interesting is the governor and Republicans both want to close it by 2029. But the governor said, you have to give me a more comprehensive plan. We need something. Go back to February. Evers introduced his plan to revamp the prison system, turn Waupun into a vocational village, in his words, expand places like Stanley to take folks from Waupun temporarily, then we're going to move them back, then take Green Bay and move them. There's no money in the budget to actually build new capacity, expand these other prisons, right? The governor called for $325 million for adult corrections. There's nothing for that. There's $15 million for planning. And Mark Bourne, the co-chair of finance, said, look, this is going to take multiple budgets to do. So they were going to argue, I'm sure, that, hey, we get done this biennium, the next one, and be done by end of 29, close Green Bay. The governor said, not enough. There is worth noting, though, that they did include money for a new juvenile facility in Dane County. That is key because we have one coming online in Milwaukee that's under construction right now. Lincoln Hills is still open. I remember in 2018, there's a bill signed, so we're going to close it in a couple of years. It wasn't done very well the way they crafted it. But that said, Dane County is a second component that's key to closing that because you have to have capacity to take those kids. Milwaukee by itself is not enough. There's money now for Dane County to have that facility, so that's going to help. But with the governor's plan, you empty out Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake and make it into a medium security adult prison that allows movement to get people out of, you know, Waupun and then eventually close Green Bay. So ways away from closing Green Bay, but they both want to get there. Now, it's interesting, the Iowa's Village president, Jim Rafter, has been calling for Green Bay to close for years. He said 29 could be an aggressive timeline. I've never closed a prison before. I don't know what it takes. But his point was that, you know, this could take a while to get this done. So I'm happy they agree, but they can't agree to agree on how to get it done. So another little hiccup there in that process.
Well, speaking of timelines, we've been talking a lot about how fast this went. So for our final topic, I just want to zoom out, talk about what's going on in Washington that kind of caused us to all be running around all day yesterday. Why the rush? What was the component of this bill out of Washington that had Wisconsin lawmakers needing to respond?
So it's called a provider assessment. It's basically on hospitals. What you do is you take hospital patient revenues, you tax it, you take that money, put it into your formula with the federal government to get matching federal funds. That then generates more money come back into Wisconsin, and then you put that money into mostly the hospitals, but also you keep a little bit, the skim, if you call it in government. We're at 1.8% of patient revenues. The max allowed in federal law is 6% to get matching funds. You go above 6%, but no matching funds above 6. They want to go in this deal that was struck this week to 6%. The issue was reconciliation bills. The House version and then the Senate version both had language kind of going after this arrangement. The Senate version, which basically became law or will become law on Friday, said if you are a state like Wisconsin, not expand Medicaid, you cannot have a new assessment or expand one after the effective reconciliation bill. That's why they'll rush to get this whole budget done, because if you cut that off, you're missing out $1 billion a year, I think it is, and more money for hospitals. It's the whole crux of why Mary Felskowski is unhappy. It's the whole crux of why we rush so hard to beat a reconciliation bill to have that money available for hospitals going forward.
And it turns out that they did beat it by about 12 hours. It passed just a couple of hours ago, past the House in Washington. And like you say, they are expected to sign it Friday. And so that kind of that trickle down here in Wisconsin kept us on our toes a little bit. And that'll do it for us here at Rewind this week. I am Anya Van Wagendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And we will see you next week.
Yes.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.